Who is your daddy?
I am your father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
Yeah, 2016 is looking amazing.
Which is definitely something I want to get to, is the 2015 and 2016 talk.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's. I've got a few more news items to cover real quick.
Just so we
cover
everything. Damn you and your news.
And I just want to make sure we touch on everything that happened in 2015. We got to do it.
Got to do it.
Nintendo. Speaking of Nintendo, they had a couple big announcements this year. So I'll put these together. They had two big things were announced this year. Number one, they announced their new, I think it's going to be a console called NX. And that's the code name for it. It probably won't be called that. Most of the time when you hear an announcement for a Nintendo console, they end up naming it something else. You know, I remember back in the day when the Revolution was going to be something, that became the Wii. There was something called, I think the Wii U was called the Cafe or something like that.
That sounds terrible.
There was a few other ones. Nintendo's always had code names. Oh, the Dolphin became the GameCube. So there's been a few others. So NX probably won't be the final name. People have all sorts of predictions about what that's going to be like. So that'll be interesting to see what happens. We don't really have much to share there other than it's interesting to hear that Nintendo is already turning the page, it seems like, away from the Wii U. For good reason. With all the sales numbers we talked about, the Wii U numbers look really bad on a bar graph next to the other two.
Yeah, it had an extra year compared to Sony and Microsoft.
Yeah.
And the PS4 and Xbox One, and yet both those consoles have easily outsold the Wii U. I'm excited about what the NX will be, just because I'm going to guess that Nintendo's been humbled by now. I'm hoping. Yeah. I know Nintendo's a tough company to humble, because they kind of just do their own thing. It's almost as if they don't care. I know they do.
They live in a bubble, you know? They live kind of separate from the rest of the world in a lot of ways, and they've said time and time again, probably for 10, 12 years now, we're not here to compete with these other systems. And so, okay,
which
we get
is
it.
That's weird.
Message received, but you are still competing for our dollars and for our entertainment time and
you
money.
You just said that. Like earlier when you were talking about Konami, you're like, these businesses don't care about you, which, by the way, that broke my heart, and they only want your money. And I'm sitting there going, okay, Nintendo's a huge business, huge corporation. They make a lot of money. They have a lot of money. Yet they're struggling, and they're not. It almost comes across as they're not listening, and their messaging is terrible. But again, I don't want to go on a long rant about that. We don't have a lot of information about NX, but I will say, as a fan of all consoles, if you guys haven't picked up on it already, I buy everything. If it's handheld consoles, I buy it. So I definitely support Nintendo, I support Sony, I support Microsoft, and
they have some of my favorite IP ever, and they continue to. And they continue to put out good games. I do have a 3DS, and there's so many games on that system that I enjoy. My kids, of course, are learning to love gaming thanks primarily to Nintendo platforms and Nintendo games, even now, even today. So I'm a huge supporter of Nintendo. Currently, I don't even own a Wii U. We do have a Wii that still gets actually surprisingly regular use with the family, but I'm looking forward to see what the NX is. I also think their announcement of going into mobile game development was in some ways a reaction to maybe finally listening to what the market's doing, what the market's looking for, with where the gamers are, with where the new gamers potentially could be, but also because it's money. I mean, talk about being a business, they want to make money. There's a lot of money to be made in mobile gaming. So
I think those things kind of go hand in hand. They announced the NX. It sounds like it's got potential, you know, a lot of the rumors that have come out, to be something very different, which I like that about Nintendo. I like that they go off the rails.
Sometimes when they go too far off the rails with, like, Virtual Boy, it comes back to bite them.
And sometimes when they steer too close to what they feel is going to be safe, like what I think the Wii U was, at least in terms of design and naming it and the messaging of it, it was so similar to the Wii that they ended up shooting themselves in the foot. They really hindered their own ability to market their new system, because I can't think of anyone outside of, you know, the gaming community who really had an understanding that this is a new system that just came out.
most people thought it was the same thing.
A lot of people that the ones that will come up to me and say I'm playing a Nintendo, even if I'm playing like a Vita, those people did not know what a Wii U was. They would always say, "Well, I'm happy with my Wii." You know, they don't care. Right. So it's hard to get them to upgrade, but then by the time they are going to upgrade, they didn't really know the difference or understand the difference between a Wii U and a Wii. And the same thing can be said about a 3DS, 2DS, a new 3DS. I mean, come on. Nintendo, I love you, but you do the dumbest stuff I've ever.
Yeah, they really do. But, I mean, connected to that Nintendo news was some really sad news from this summer when Nintendo president Satoru Iwata passed away. And I remember many E3s and many of the recent Nintendo Directs that included him, and he struck me as a person who seemed really likable and really genuine, at least as far as a marketing PR person could be, I suppose. So that's just from the outside looking in. So someone who just consumed the media that he was involved in, I always really liked that guy. I liked the way he spoke to us. I liked the way that he presented stuff. He was there for pretty key moments, like unveiling the DS and the Wii. It was sad to hear that he passed away, and passed away what sounds like in a tragic way with that illness at a pretty young age of 55. So that was very sad, and it was interesting the way that Nintendo just went quiet for a few months there. I think it took from maybe July until, I mean, they released some games,
but I don't remember hearing any major news out of the Nintendo camp until probably November.
I think they took like a month off their Direct, so they came back like 2 months later.
Did they?
And then they did a nice little, you know, like tribute to him and...
Right.
You know, yeah, I agree with you, and no, I'm not just saying this because he passed away. I really did like him a lot. I enjoyed listening to him speak. Please understand. I loved his passion for gaming. Mm-hmm. And he's one of them that I just enjoy. It's just like I enjoy Phil Spencer, and I really liked Jack Trenton.
Yeah, Jack Trenton was the man.
I just love
Jack. I wonder what he's doing. That was definitely sad, but it was a key moment of this year, and it definitely involved the gaming community. And I know that people across all consoles from all companies just took a moment to pause and kind of appreciate him and his contributions. So I encourage, if you haven't really read much about him and his history, I mean, he was one of those guys who was working in the trenches doing programming. So he's not just some marketing PR guy who came up through the ranks just talking about games. He actually got his hands dirty in the nitty-gritty, helping with deeper levels of that process of
getting games into
the hands of people. So and then one last thing I'll mention, and it's not because of the game itself, Fallout 4, but just the way it was announced and released. I just made a note of this one because I hope this is the beginning of a trend that we start to see going forward. And we've seen it in the past. It just never really caught on. But a major title, even though it's rumored and maybe some things about it leak, officially announced and then released within 6 months.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
I loved that. I mean, sure, maybe you got to make us wait till we hear the official announcement. You know, maybe we don't hear about something like, Horizon until E3 of 2016, but then it releases that fall. Now, I'm not saying they shouldn't have announced it last year. I'm excited about that game. But the longer you make us wait for something, I'm looking at you, Watch Dogs, the less the hype is going to be. I'm looking at you, No Man's Sky, Evolve. The hype for that game would have led to it being a great seller in 2014 had it released that year. But it kept getting pushed back to the point that I don't remember anyone talking about it by the time it released. So I'm hoping that this example set by Fallout and the excitement, it even got someone like me to buy it. And I've never really dug in that deeply to the Fallout games or even to Skyrim, although I've played all of them, just haven't played them for that long, and they've never really been my favorite type of game. I think they're amazing and impressive, but Fallout 4, the way it was announced, talked about, and then marketed in those 6 months, totally it caught me off guard, and I was like, yeah, I need to get this. It's coming out like right away.
I know when a lot of people in the industry were speculating that it was going to be announced and that it was going to release the same year, obviously I got a little bit of hype because I was like, I don't think they can do it. Like I'm not used to seeing that. And so for them to actually not only say it, but then do it, like they announced it and then they didn't delay the game, was spectacular. It's something that I would love to see. And you mentioned Watch Dogs, and it's funny, even before you said Watch Dogs, I was like, I'm waiting for Tim to stop talking. I'm not even listening to him anymore. I just need to talk about Watch Dogs right now.
Watch Dogs, yeah. Yeah.
So, Watch Dogs, as we know, I'm not going to go over the whole story and not treat y'all like y'all are idiots, took way too dang long to release. It ended up being, I won't say a failure, I think it sold well, but I think as far as the overall consensus of how people felt about the game, it didn't do too well. Again, a lot of people like it, but there are a lot of people who do not like that game. But,
well, and part of the problem was the wait that they had to get that game.
I think
and
the so hype level...
If it had released earlier at the same level of quality, it probably would have been received a lot better.
And I think a lot of people thought it was going to be GTA. And while it has some similarities, I definitely saw Ubisoft trying to make it a little bit more serious tone than GTA. And so that turned a lot of people off. But the point I wanted to make, and this is just a rumor, and I'm going to make the prediction, because I think it would be pretty cool if it's true. The rumor is Assassin's Creed for this year is being delayed till 2017. So we're not going to get any Assassin's Creed this year, which is going to be the first time in, like, what, 7 years?
Yeah.
That since, they haven't released an Assassin's Creed. Back to back to back to back. But the replacement game would be Watch Dogs 2. So my immediate thought was, and here's where my brain went, is that Ubisoft has learned their lesson. They are going to release Watch Dogs 2 this year. They're going to announce it at E3, or maybe a little bit before it. I doubt it. I think it's going to be a huge announcement at E3. I think it's going to release later this year, and I think what their goal is to make Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed every other year. So instead of having an Assassin's Creed every year, they're now going to go, okay, Watch Dogs is 2016, Assassin's Creed is 2017. Watch Dogs 3 is 2018, Assassin's Creed is 2019. So I think that's really cool because I'm a huge, and you guys will get to know this, fanboy of Assassin's Creed. And I actually put, and it was before this announcement or rumor came out, I actually put as one of my hyped games that I was like looking forward to this year was another Assassin's Creed. So when I found out, I was a little bummed, but then I kept reading and it said, but it should be replaced with Watch Dogs 2. And I was like, oh, I'm a big fan of Watch Dogs, in case you...
Well, what would make me even happier is if, and I'm not saying I don't want more Assassin's Creed games. I love those games. I'm a huge fan of that series. I'm okay with them making it 3 years in between. And putting one of their other franchises in that spot, too. Like, if they want to have a big fall release every year, we can always look forward to a big fall Ubisoft game dropping. You know, you get something like Watch Dogs, and then you get Far Cry the next year, and then you get Assassin's Creed the next year, or whatever the franchise might be. And it doesn't always have to be that every year. I don't mean it needs to be predictable, but 2 years is great. I'm okay with them stretching it out farther. I mean, think about the Grand Theft Auto series. You can make one argument that there's too much time between games. I don't think that's the case. I think it's the right amount of time. They work on it, they perfect it, and they put out in what's considered by many people to be a masterpiece of a game. So what are existing for the Assassin's Creed games, it's great. Those are great games. Could they have been better? Absolutely. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what that extra year or whatever, half year, whatever it might be, I'm looking forward to seeing what that does for Assassin's Creed. But I'll take what you said and take it a step further. I'd like to see them give those games even more time to breathe between entries. And that's coming from a fan of the series. There has not been an entry in the Assassin's Creed games yet, at least not the mainline games, that I have disliked. There's ones that I think are weaker than others.
Yeah.
But there's not been one yet that I've said, oh, this is a garbage game. So when people say this Assassin's Creed game is awful, it actually really, really annoys me because they are still good open-world action-adventure games when taken by themselves. When taken with your expectations and what you've seen them do before and where you were hoping they would go, I could see the disappointment.
I think but if they you...
Are, they so, are solid games from start to finish. All of them are.
I think
they
if just, you took the Assassin's Creed label off of one and just released it, like if they were like just to release Syndicate as Syndicate... People would be like, this is such an amazing IP, but then because it's Assassin's Creed.
And Black Flag, just a pirates game. Just call it Black Flag. Yeah. That's all it is.
I think it's that that negative stigma of Assassin's Creed is just such a terrible a game, and it's not.
Yeah.
It's not. Well, they make quality games. I personally, and I know you said you wouldn't mind 3 years. You're pushing it for me. I have to. I want mine every year, but I'll take 2 years.
Okay.
I'll take a break.
Yeah, I mean, I just think about all the games that I haven't been able to get to this year, and we're going to talk about this.
Tim, it's not always about you, Tim.
Let's make it about me. but, I mean, think about all the games that I haven't had a chance to get to this year. I mean, maybe my opinion on this will change in a few months or next year, but right now I'm like, yeah, you can space these things out a little bit. You don't have to bunch these things all together. It doesn't have to be a cluster of crazy huge games, but that's not the way the industry works. They're not trying to get out of each other's way. For the most part, they're trying to release things in a window that makes sense for themselves as a company, for their investors. So we won't dig into all that, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see if you're right. Will they announce Watch Dogs at E3? Will it come out this year? Or some other IP to replace that Assassin's Creed void that will be left this October, November? So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
I hope so. I really do hope they release Watch Dogs, too. I love the first one.
Speaking of Fallout 4 and Assassin's Creed Syndicate and other games that have come out this year, how about we talk about our favorite games from 2015?
How about we do that?
Let's do that. So yeah, let's talk about top 10 games this year. What I was thinking we could do is, and I've put this list together, it's one of those things that's kind of fluid. You know, sometimes as I think back on a game, I think of it one way one day and then another way another day. So it just depends. And if I happen to revisit that game, maybe I'll rethink my placement on it. But this top 10 list is as it stands right now, looking back on the year of 2015. I'm okay with starting at number 10 and working my way up. I don't know if you want to just alternate, take turns, or each share a complete list. So what do you think is the best way to do it?
I say let's just – I think it would be cool if you share your 10 – or your first number 10, and then I will share my number 10, and then you share your 9.
Yeah, we can alternate. Talk about that works. That works.
Kind of see if we get any of them that are actually the same number.
Matched up, yeah.
Because we haven't – I haven't shared my top 10 with you. You haven't shared it with me, so I don't know.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to pull a Steve Harvey and just start naming games that aren't on my list. I love that guy. All right, number 10. This is actually number 10. It's on the card. Can't change it. For me, this year was Ollie Ollie 2, Welcome to Ollywood.
That is not on my list at all.
Really cool skateboarding game. It is an indie title, which... For those of you who don't know Derek, if you get to know Derek, he typically leans away from those types of smaller indie titles, although Trash. he's being brought into the fold little by little.
Garbage.
But Ollie Ollie 2 is a really great, really challenging skateboarding game, and the controls are difficult to learn, but once you kind of get the hang of them, I think they're great. I wouldn't change them at all. So love that game. I like the way when you make a mistake and crash, you can just hit triangle and start over real fast. I love the way it plays on the Vita. It's a great game to play on your Vita. And really, really enjoy that game. I poured a lot of time into it. I couldn't beat all the levels. The challenge gets to the point, kind of like those Trials motorcycle games, the challenge gets to the point where you end up going back to easier levels because it gets so hard at a certain point. So that's one takeaway from it, is that it's a little too difficult, but really fun, better than Tony Hawk, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I haven't played Tony Hawk, so I'll be nice and not say anything about that. I did download Ollie Ollie because I believe it was free. It was the second one, right? That was free.
Yep.
So I downloaded that. I played it for about 0.2 to maybe 0.3 seconds.
Yeah, I wouldn't like it if I weren't good at it either, so I'm with you.
So I was like, oh, this is garbage. Delete. And then I sent an email to Sony to get a refund.
Get your money back. Yeah, that's so smart.
I moved on from that one real quick.
Don't listen to Derek. This is a great game. You guys should try it. All right, so what's your number 10 game? All right,
number 10 is... Drumroll? No? Okay. Batman Arkham Knight. So I enjoyed Batman Arkham Knight. I wouldn't say I enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed the other Batman games. I don't know. I'm a big Batman fan as a... comic book character. More I'm into the movies. I don't read comics. But I like him as a character. And so I did like the first Batman, and I really enjoyed City, but I just didn't get into Arkham Knight as much. I mean, I'm not going to go into complete detail on everything that was wrong with it, but it just didn't hit for me. I did finish the campaign. I did enjoy it overall. That's why it's number 10. But it was definitely a game I thought was going to be better than what it ended up being. I know okay. you played it, and you I have did. An opinion.
I do, but it'll be a different number on my list. So
we'll oh, it that. Made Once, your top 10.
It, okay. it made my list. So go ahead and give me your number 9.
All right, so my number 9 is The Order, 1886.
Shortest game in history.
I love this game.
Just kidding, it's not.
I know it gets knocked for being short, for having bland, boring gameplay. As a fan of Gears of War, and, well, I should just say this, cover-based shooters. I love cover-based shooters.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was as bad as people made it out to be. I'm not going to sit here and say that the gameplay is amazing or that it has awesome guns or anything like that. But I think the thing I loved about it the most was, first of all, I enjoyed the characters. I really enjoyed the characters. Which helped me enjoy the story, because the characters are what helped me enjoy, or what made the story reasonable. I enjoyed the world and the potential of the lore. I'm not going to go into spoilers, but the game kind of does set up an opportunity for a sequel. And when I played through it, I was like, yes, give me more. I want this game. I actually beat the game 3 times.
Is it fair to say that it's a good introduction to an IP and it's a really pretty game and it's not a broken game? I mean, those things combined make for a
yes.
pretty good experience.
And it was yeah. Yes, I would agree with everything you just say. I said I played it back to back to back. I got over 20 hours into it just playing it that way, and I just really enjoyed it. And I really, Sony, I know you're not listening. Shuhei, I know you don't give a crap about me. I don't exist in your world. But please release a sequel. I'd be so happy. I was a big fan.
Oh, I'd be shocked if they didn't. But
I hope.
All right, my number 9 game is Star Wars Battlefront, that little shooter that came out this November. You might have seen some advertisements here and there for it.
No, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's not everywhere. So Star Wars apparently is on people's minds this year, and I thought Battlefront was one of the best looking games this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the reasons they could focus, and I think I talked about this before, but one of the reasons they could really focus on those visuals is the meat of the game itself is pretty thin. There's not a ton outside of multiplayer. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not insulting the modes that it has, how fun the multiplayer can be. All those things are there. And I did play it. I played a good amount of it. I played the beta, and then I played a decent amount once it actually released. I liked this game. It was worth buying. I'm not one who's going to stand up here and say, you know, it's not worth $60 and go on a big rant about that. No problem. $60 is a fine price for this game. You can get a ton of time out of it if you like multiplayer shooters, if you have friends to play with, and if you're a Star Wars fan. It's totally worth the purchase. So I liked it a lot. It just, there's not been a lot of reason for me to go back to it since. So after the first couple weeks, I played it off and on while playing other games, and then it just kind of faded away from being on a regular rotation game. But that being said, great looking game. The mechanics feel good. I like it a lot. I'm a Star Wars fan, so the timing was right.
Yeah, it's a great game.
Battlefront.
You're 2 for 2 on not having games that are not on my list. So sweet. I can actually talk about Battlefront. I agree, Battlefront's a great game. I think it's gorgeous. I think it plays great. I would agree with most people that say that it's kind of a shallow shooter, or it's not very deep. And so it's very accessible for people, because I discovered this because I was actually good at it. And I suck. Like, I don't kind of suck at Call of Duty. I'm talking, you put me in Call of Duty, and yeah, every once in a while I have a good game, but most of the time I'm 2 and 12, 3 and 15. Like, Call of Duty is good. Yeah, it's absolutely great, yes. But, you know, that's not even good at basketball. That's just terrible. So... Call of Duty, not very good at it, but Battlefront, I'm not exaggerating, every time I played it, I would be like, man, I'm top 3. I'm number 1.
Well,
I'm this.
Not only is it easy to pick up and play, it is definitely, not only is it lacking in single player depth, but it's lacking in a lot of that, the motivation to come back to multiplayer for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't feel like their unlock system has the right hooks in it. Like,
there's nothing really there.
They, they do have an unlock system. They do have guns you can unlock and perks and cards, and they have a lot of things there that you can look through and customize your character, but it's not as much as you think when you actually dig into it. The differences between the guns are minor.
Mm-hmm.
They do feel a little different. You know, some of them have higher damage and, you know, lower fire rate and things you'd expect in a standard shooter. But I enjoyed Call of Duty more than you did, Black Ops 3.
Suck
it. And I didn't play a lot of the single player, but when I played with the multiplayer, the things you can unlock and the way you can customize your loadout in Call of Duty, for any of you who have played any Call of Duty in the last 10 years or so, it's so far beyond what Battlefront offers that it's hard for me to put this game any higher than 9, even though it's a good game.
It's a good game. It's definitely a good game.
Yeah. Well, let me go up to number 8 then. For me, the number 8 game, the only reason it's probably not any higher is because I didn't get a lot of time with multiplayer with this game, and I also did not finish the single player campaign. So I still have more of this game to dig into. But for right now, my number 8 game is Dying Light. Little game about running around in zombie land. The what's the name of the company? Techland, I think?
Yes.
The ones who created Dead Island. For the most part, kind of a disappointing zombie game. The original trailer for Dead Island 1 was one of the best game trailers I've ever seen, mm-hmm. and the game didn't quite live up to it. But, putting that game aside, Dying Light looks and plays fantastically. I like the way it feels. The parkour, running and climbing feels great. The way you can connect with your weapons, your melee weapons on the zombies feels fantastic. Shooting didn't feel as good compared to some other games, but it still was okay. It still worked fine. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, I actually was scared at nighttime. And so they achieved
their mission in terms of that when it comes to bringing that fear. So, yeah, Dying Light for me is number 8. And if I were to look back later this year or the next year and say, what were the best games 2015? It's possible this game will have gone way up from there. But for right now, same as Battlefront. Really good game, but not higher than 8.
Good game, good game. All right, my number 8 is Dying Light. So
hey!
I did play this game a lot. I actually co-opted a lot. I probably played more than half the game with up to 3 to 4 people total playing. And then I ended up playing like the last third to 40%, somewhere around there, by myself. And I just really enjoyed every moment I had with it. I actually plan on playing it, well, with you, Tim, as soon as possible. I'd like to beat it on the PS4 and then play the upcoming DLC, which kind of seems like it's its own game because it's actually bigger than the original Dying Light. So it's a great game. I'm not going to add too much to it because I think you said it. It has phenomenal gameplay, has an amazing world. It definitely sets the atmosphere at night. I did not like playing at night. I rarely played at night.
Let's stop this podcast now and go play.
Yeah. We don't really need to finish. Nobody cares anyways. No, it's a great game.
All right, well, give me your number 7.
All right, so number 7 will be Halo 5.
What's that? Is that an indie game?
Yeah, it's just a little title. Came out on Microsoft's handheld.
Oh, okay, nice. The Zune?
Yeah. yes, you can play Halo 5 on the Zune. Yes, it's Halo 5's it's a Halo game, and it's done really well. I was a big fan of Halo 4. I liked Halo 1 through 3 a lot, and Reach and ODST is good too. But I wasn't a huge Bungie Halo fan. Like, when 343 took over and released Halo 4, I actually prefer 343's games than over Bungie's Halo games. So that said, I was really hyped for Halo 5 because of how much I loved Halo 4. I also played this one co-op and beat the campaign in one day. Not because it's extremely short, but just because I played the heck out of it. I played, I won't say a good amount of multiplayer. I don't like multiplayer shooters that much, you'll discover. So I played a little bit of it, had fun, and then was like, I'm done until somebody wants to play the campaign with me again. So if we can start the whole hashtag, Tim, please buy an Xbox One or Xbox One Tim or something, maybe I'll play Halo 5 again with him. But yes, absolutely phenomenal game. Really enjoyed it. It hit everything that I wanted.
after I buy a Wii U, a gaming PC. God,
now we're talking.
Maybe, like... maybe a new car. Maybe then I'll get an Xbox One.
So basically, when Xbox 3 comes out, you'll buy an Xbox One when nobody cares.
You know, they're not going to name it something that makes sense. It's going to be called, like, Xbox Blue or something like that. Like, it's not going to make any sense.
Yeah.
All right, so number 7 for me is my second indie title on my list. Oh, so gosh. Get excited. It's Hotline Miami 2, Wrong Number.
Yeah, it's a great game.
Yeah, it really is. You need to shut your mouth. Hotline Miami 2 is a lot of fun. I recommend it on the Vita, even though they do have a PS4 version, but it's cross-buy, so if you've got both systems, cross-buy, cross-save. But the Vita is the way to go. Nothing better than playing Hotline Miami 2 while you're sitting on the crapper. So it is a TMI? No?
No, it's perfect.
It is a... it's a
one of the bloodiest games that I've played all year. Unfortunately, it is a pixel-based one, so it's real pixely. It's not a super realistic, but you'd be surprised at the animations they include, the fast-paced action. It's really challenging. I think it's way harder than the first one was, and I thought the first one was challenging. But again, kind of like Ollie Ollie 2, you've got a quick restart ability to just quickly hit the button and start that section over as you clear floor after floor of bad guys. The different abilities they give you with each different hat that you put on is kind of cool, like a one punch kill, or maybe you get, you know, dual wield weapons or whatever it might be. So each special skill that you get with each hat is really cool. So a great game. A lot of people think it's worse than the first one. I just think it's not a huge improvement over the first one, but it's the first Hotline Miami that I've played on the Vita, and I really liked it. So
sold me on it. I'm gonna go buy it.
Yeah, can't wait for you not to play it. So I'll move on past that, but I highly recommend it, you guys. If you like fast-paced, challenging action games, go get it. All right. Number 6. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Batman Arkham Knight. I like this game a lot. It's not as good as Arkham Asylum.
I think it's kind of on par with City, although I liked the story of City a little bit better. The tank stuff grew on me. I didn't like it at first, but it grew on me. I thought it was fun. It controlled well. The parts that annoyed me more than the tank parts were like the actual chases in Gotham City. I didn't like the way the car controlled when you're going full speed. I liked the tank moments when you're actually kind of strafing around and firing at the other tanks. That was okay, you know, in small doses. It got a little tiresome
towards the end.
They overdid it, but I agree.
Yeah, a couple of the battles are like, okay, now there's 40 tanks to blow up. I'm like, holy cow.
And I think there was like a couple of like tank puzzles. I didn't like those.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't awful, but it did, I guess, I'm thinking back on it, detract from the overall experience. That is a game I need to go back and finish the last few missions on. Got distracted from that one and didn't finish it. But I've played almost that entire game. The percentages on my completion, you know, radial dial there are pretty high. A game that's coming up on my list here pretty soon will explain to you why I fell off of that game. But Batman is really great. Man, does it look good. The rain and just the city.
Wow, it looks great.
Yeah, it's good looking.
I just think Batman himself, at least in these games, and some of you who are Batman fans are going to hate me for this, I think he's a pretty dull character. And I'm not expecting him to be like the Joker. I understand why he's so dull, but for some reason in this game, it stood out more than in past games. I don't know why that is. Like, I can appreciate that he's kind of a foil for the crazy bad guys, guys like Joker and Scarecrow and all the other crazy bad guys he interacts with. He kind of has to be this stoic, silent hero type, and that kind of brings, that kind of contrasts with their crazy clownness, you know the way that these guys are so silly, these villains. So I get that, but for some reason in this game, in the cutscenes and in the times when he would talk, I was like, Batman, wake up a little bit. Like, did you just, like, he just, I don't know, something about the way his character is portrayed in this one. Maybe it was just me this time, but I didn't enjoy him as a character as much as I have in the past.
No, I mean, for me personally, I mean, he was still Batman to me, but I didn't like the fact that he was dealing with all these villains and he had help, but he refused it. And I know that's like his personality, but when it seems like it's the end of Gotham, I just think realistically he would have asked for help, and I think that was a missed opportunity for them to open up maybe some co-op. Plus, I don't know if you got to these parts or you actually experienced them. Fighting with a sidekick was super fun in Batman. Yep.
Whether it's Robin or Nightwing or Catwoman.
I love switching back and forth. It made the combat very, very fun. Not that it's not fun, but I really enjoyed it. Anyways, I loved those sequences.
Completely agree.
Yep.
All right, so what's the next one on your list that we haven't gotten to yet?
Okay, my number six is more of a game that's built off of what I think it will be, so I put it here because I haven't actually played a lot of it. And that's Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The reason why I haven't played a lot of it is because the game is freaking huge. It just came out in December, and I just don't have time to commit to it now with this little game called Rocket League that keeps interfering in my life.
But it's
the little bit I did play of it, it's amazing, especially for it being on the Wii U and the way I think it's pushing the Wii U. It's getting the most out of it. Even the original on the Wii, which you have a Wii, you really should buy it.
I've looked for it before. It's expensive.
Buy it on the 3DS and don't listen to Frank Clark. Buy it on the 3DS. But anyways, Xenoblade Chronicles on the Wii and on the new 3DS. Oh, do you have a new 3DS?
No.
Then never mind. Don't buy it on
the 3DS. Yeah, I just have the 3DS XL. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the only game that you were talking about earlier. How the new 3DS XL only has a few. That's the only one that I'm aware of that's out. But anyways, the game pushed the Wii. I mean, it did things that I didn't even think the Wii could do. And it actually, I mean, it was, granted, it was 480p or whatever, but it was still a beautiful game. And so to play this one, the little bit I've played, it's a gorgeous game. It has still the same fun combat, and it's so much bigger than what was already a huge game. And so that's why it's a little intimidating, but I definitely had to put it on my list because I know if you ask me when I do actually play it, which will probably be in 2017... no, I'll play it sometime this year. But if you asked me, I'd be like, yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite games from 2015.
All right, well, when you do get a chance to get around to it and dig into it a little more, then you'll have to share a little bit more about, you know, is it still in the same spot in this list? Would it move up or down? Like, how does it rank compared to other ones once you play it a little bit more?
Sounds like a plan.
What's your number five game then?
Number five, Bloodborne. All right, so this one, even though it's number five and you think, well, that's not very high, I'm very proud of this game. And the reason I say that is because I've enjoyed the Souls games, if you can enjoy those games. I remember buying Dark Souls on day one and trying out and being like, oh, I'm really sick of this game, so I stopped playing it. And then Dark Souls 2, I played and got kind of far and enjoyed it. But again, I just wasn't really good at the games. I'm not afraid to admit it. I sucked at the Souls games, though I found enjoyment in sucking. So Bloodborne came out. I had already decided I was going to buy it because I buy everything. But I was also a little scared to buy it because I was like, really don't want to spend, and I was buying it digital, really don't want to spend another $60 on a game. I'm just going to quit after 3 hours and say it's too hard. So the reason I'm proud of this game is because I beat it. I actually stuck with it. I put in probably over 50, 60 hours. Yes, I'll admit I had to use a guide. I also loved the community. I was part of the Podcast Beyond community at the time I was playing this game, and people constantly posting and dropping hints and helping each other. I absolutely loved it. And that's what I think helped drive me to get through and actually beat Bloodborne.
Nice.
So I'm very proud.
Yeah, that's one that's not on my list, but I've got kind of a little side list of honorable mentions that are either re-releases or games that I just didn't get the time to play. And Bloodborne and Fallout are good examples of new games that I have access to and I'm excited about trying. Because I've given them both a little bit of time. I have not given them a fair shake to really try to get their hooks in me yet. So I need to dive back into Bloodborne, but that's for right now.
And if you have the patience for it, and you have to play it at a time where you're actually driven to play it, there is a lot of joy. Because when you do destroy a boss, it's so satisfying, especially when you're doing it on your own.
Well, my number five game has a similar feeling when you beat the boss, but I'm sorry to tell you that it's another indie game.
I already know what it is. I mean, you want me to say it for you?
Go ahead.
Axiom Verge.
No, it's not Axiom Verge.
I was wrong.
No, it's not.
Axiom Verge is another honorable mention because I haven't beaten that game. I don't even think I've gotten halfway through it, but I like it. So it's not Axiom Verge. It's Titan Souls.
Oh, gosh.
It's a game that came out this past spring,
and it's another game. It looks like a kind of an old, like an early Super Nintendo game. It's a little bit better than an 8-bit, but it's, you know, about a 16-bit looking game. If you ever played Shadows of the Colossus, where you've got a big empty world and you're just trying to get to the next kind of boss room or boss area, that's what this game is. There's no explanation. There's no cutscenes. There's no written word as to what you're doing or why. You're just this little guy that shows up on the screen. You got this bow and arrow. You got one arrow to shoot, and that's it. And then you got the ability to pull the arrow back to you. And each boss is a one-hit kill, but getting their weak spot, hitting it with the arrow, in some cases seems impossible when you first approach them. So it's one of those games where you try the fight, you die. You try it again, you die. You try it again, you die. It's very much like a Souls game in that way. A lot of trial and error. So I played this game out of curiosity at first, but that got its hooks in me. That challenge where it was like, I got so close. I finally found that weak spot, and then it killed me. So I went back, and I was gritting my teeth. I was mad this time, and he killed me again. So then I sat up, and it killed me again. And so, like, it was that type of rotation. And so I started knocking out boss after boss, and I finally beat that next boss. And then the next one took me two or three nights in a row, but I finally beat that boss. And then you finally get to the end of the game, and the final battle is so difficult. I basically just, and my wife was nearby, she was kind of interested in it too, because it had an old school vibe to it, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to have to say I experienced the whole game, because I made it to the final fight, I'm just going to have to live with the fact that I can't beat it. But I couldn't live with it, so I kept going back to it, and finally beat it. Really challenging game. It's not for everyone, because the visuals are old school, but it controls fantastically, and the concept is really unique. So, number five game. The games that are above it are not at all indie titles. The only reason they won is because I think each of them are masterclass in what they do. But
Titan Souls is great, man. If you haven't tried it, you should try it.
All right, let me ask you this. Did you buy Titan Souls like day one or real early in the release?
Yeah.
Okay, here's why I asked that. I remember, this is before I like really knew who you were, but mm-hmm. I remember you posting about it, and you actually had me interested. Because you kind of did what you did here, and you went over why you loved it, and I was like, okay, he's kind of selling me. And so I went on my PS4 or whatever, and I went to the store, checked the price, and looked at the game. And as soon as I saw the pixel art, I was like, nope. Nope. Submitted a grief report against you.
And oh, that's who you. Did that. You son of... Okay, so anyway, yeah, no, I highly recommend it. If you can kind of get past the way it looks. And to me, I like the way it looks. I wouldn't change the way it looks, but, you know, to each their own. Shadows of Colossus meets the Dark Souls series, and it's a little game called Titan Souls. Really great. All right. Have we both shared our top, I guess, 5 through 10?
Yeah.
Can we do that? Okay. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and jump to number 4. So my number 4 game this year is Metal Gear Solid 5 The Phantom Pain, starring Kiefer Sutherland and Hideo Kojima. this game is so good. It's so good. I love the way it controls. The game is just flat out fun. Going out on these missions to rescue someone who's been captured, to just take out a base, whatever it is that you're going in to do, to extract somebody, or even just you decide you're going to go assault some fortress. Going in there with your D-Buddy, whether you use D-Dog or D-Horse, or in most cases, in my opinion, Quiet is the best partner to take, although D-Dog is pretty cool. And then attacking that base and, you know, kind of measuring out where everybody is, figuring out who to attack first. Do I want to Fulton this guy? Do I want to kill this guy? Man, what a great stealth action game set in that more modern military setting. Really, really like it. The story is okay. The story is solid.
Mm-hmm.
It's Metal Gear Solid. But it's just told so poorly that it takes away from it. There's so many interruptions to that story that it does hinder it. But that being said, what a good game. It's my fourth favorite game this year.
Nice. All right, so my number 4 is, and this is kind of a surprise for me, because going into 2015... it was predicted to be my game of the year. So, in case you don't know, when I hype myself up for games, I kind of pick what I think my game of the year will be before I play any of the games.
That seems smart, yeah.
2014 was Dragon Age. Dragon Age ended up being my game of the year. In fact, I would be willing to give Dragon Age game of the year in 2015 and 16. That's how much I loved
it. You're crazy. You're crazy. Continue.
So this game was actually supposed to be my game of the year for last year, 2015, and I ended up falling in the 4 spot, and that is The Witcher 3. I felt like The Witcher 3 was a fantastic game. It was a huge game. It is a little bit overwhelming when you first start because of how big it is, and I enjoyed The Witcher 2 a lot, so I definitely came into The Witcher 3 with a lot of hype because I already had that foundation of playing The Witcher 2. Now, I didn't play the original Witcher, even though I owned it on PC, because I bought it on Steam, like, years past when it released. And when I tried to play it, I was like, ooh, I'll just YouTube a video telling me about the plot. So, anyway, so I had a lot of hype going into it. It lived up to the hype. It's not 4 because it didn't. It's just there were some surprises. In fact, my top 3 are all, in a way, surprised to me to the fact that they could beat The Witcher 3. But overall, fantastic game, lived up to the hype, and I look forward to anything that is released from... What's their names again? I forgot.
CD Projekt Red.
CD Projekt Red. I really enjoy them, and I'm looking forward to their future projects, which hopefully will be another Witcher, and I know they've got that...
Cyberpunk game coming out.
So,
all right. Well, I don't want to talk about that garbage game. I hate that game. Why don't you give me your number 3?
Number 3 is a surprise. Even though I said earlier in the podcast I'm a huge Assassin's Creed fan, I never put them in. I don't know. They're never in the top 3. But Syndicate fell into the top 3. I absolutely enjoyed this game, and in fact, I think Tim and I were talking earlier about this game, and one of the things I would say to describe it is, Syndicate came out when I wasn't really in the mood for open world games. In fact, some of the games that had come out in September, and they will remain nameless at this point, that I thought I would get into, I didn't get into. So when this one came out, I kind of felt like I was going to have that whole open world struggle and just be like, oh, I've played Assassin's Creed 1,000 times. But it wasn't. It was as soon as I launched into that game, it was so easy to pick up and play. The characters are so lovable and likable. The world is perfect. As much as I love Bloodborne setting, I guess I just love London, right? That's where I should go.
Yeah.
So
you're British.
Yeah, pretty much. And so Syndicate was just flawless in every way for me on that side of the game. The only thing I would say that's a bit of a letdown, and this is because I'm a huge Assassin's Creed fan, I really, really wish Ubisoft would go back to please providing us with some type of narrative outside of the world that you're in during the Assassin's Creed game. I would like a modern-day story again. I really think it was ridiculous that they listened to a bunch of whiners and got rid of it. But that's the only thing that hurts it. I thought the story within Syndicate was good. I thought the characters were good. I thought the world was good. I just feel like the only thing Assassin's Creed is missing right now is that overarching story from game to game to game that they used to have that they no longer have. And that's it.
Yeah, that's actually my number 3 game too, so I can go ahead and comment on it too. I think Syndicate... It did include some modern day stuff in between, like in between some of the chapters you would complete, it would jump back to like a modern day. It was a very short, like all told, a very short little story they were telling, but they did show some. But you're right, the focus on it was dramatically less than past entries have been. So yeah, they're definitely pulling back from that a little bit. I mean, some of the past games, I want to say maybe it was 3 had the most. Some of the recent games had so much story set in modern day of like climbing around the cave and unlocking all this stuff. Remember, I think it was 3, right? When you're climbing around as Desmond, unlocking all these things, you know, shimmying up these rocks.
Gems on. Or
you're running through like a 3. Stadium trying to steal a bag from somebody. Like they kept having these modern day things happening.
And that was when people complained. People didn't like 3 as a whole. And yeah. then that was when Assassin's Creed 4 came out and kind of changed the franchise.
Yeah, so Syndicate definitely scales that back almost all the way, but not quite. There's still a little bit there.
It's and there. It's just not... They don't make me care about it. Like,
that's
look,
true.
I know a lot of that's people true. Hated Desmond, and I get it. But I still cared about Desmond's story. I may have not cared about him too much, but I cared about his story. Meaning,
right.
at some point, in every Assassin's Creed fan I've talked to... really believed the whole point of Assassin's Creed was to eventually get to a modern day game where you are Desmond and you are this amazing assassin. And so I'm not going to spoil anything, but basically Ubisoft cut that off, and they cut it off in a way that was like, really? Is this happening? Like, I actually thought at the end of that game, and again, I'm not going to spoil it, but I really thought that it was fake. Like, they were really not going to do it this way. Like, they were going to make up for it on the next game, and they didn't. They just were, like, they literally just went, no, it's done, and we're moving on. And so their modern day is there. It's just really shallow. There's not much there, and so I don't care about it.
No, I agree with you there. I do think, though, that Syndicate, as far as its historical gameplay, is more fun than I've had with any Assassin's Creed game other than maybe Black Flag. They're pretty close. I like both those games a lot. But this has that same kind of lightheartedness to it. And I'm not saying that Unity didn't have any fun moments or that the characters weren't at least kind of interesting. But one of the things that 3 and Unity were both lacking was just a sense of fun in the world. They were a little bit too self-serious, I thought, just my overall vibe of the games. Whereas Syndicate is having a lot of fun with its characters and its setting, and it just has more of a whim. I don't know if whimsical is the right word, but something about it just feels better. It's a world that I want to experience, that I want to be a part of. And so everything from the characters to the setting itself to the villains that you're going after, just, I don't know, it hit those vibes that I was missing in Unity and in 3.
I liked in Unity, I did like Arno. I thought he was a good character. But I also am a big fan of Unity, whereas most people will say it's a terrible game or a bad game.
Yeah, it's not a terrible game, but it's not their best either.
No, but I did enjoy it, and I did enjoy Arno, but I do agree with you that it's Evie and...
Yeah, and Jacob.
Evie and Jacob are definitely better characters than
and I like the villain. I like Crawford Sterrick. I like that he's understated. I thought maybe when they first introduced him he would be kind of this flamboyant character in every scene who was going to violently kill somebody, but he was a guy who had a mission that he believed in. Like, he didn't strike me at all as this purely evil guy, but actually the main characters that you play as in that game push enough buttons in him that he kind of forces his hand. And so I liked that. I liked that he was a villain who was doing what he thought was best. Like, he really believed in his mission. And even though he was the villain, and they made no qualms about, like, there was no doubt about the fact that what he was doing wasn't right, and the people he was partnering with were bad, I liked that he was kind of quieter and more contemplative. And when you did finally have those confrontations with him, it was a big deal. So liked that game a lot. I thought the story was pretty interesting, but the characters were really interesting. So, and the gameplay, the zip line they added, the smoothness of the moving around the environments is improved. Still not perfect, but improved. So, yeah, really, really liked Assassin's Creed Syndicate for me. That's my number 3 game. So now we're down to 2 each. So I figured we could each share our number 2, and then we'll give our number 1.
All right.
Go ahead. All right, so my number 2 game is another indie game called Rocket League.
I actually like that one, so I'm not going to yell at you.
Yeah, it's the one indie game that you're into. You know what? There's not a ton to say about Rocket League other than it is one of the most fun experiences that I've had with video gaming in years. I mean, many, many years, especially when it comes to multiplayer gaming. Playing the single player feels all right. It's kind of fun. The computer is okay to play against, but it does lose its luster. When you find friends to play Rocket League with, or honestly, or even just playing online against strangers with a couple pickup games, it is so fun. The competition is fierce. It moves fast. The matches are only 5 minutes long. Unless there's tons of goals, you can usually get in and out of from start to finish in a match in, 6-7 minutes, something like that, depending on how many goals are scored. It's a really, really fun game. And they do one thing really, really well. They nail the physics, the feel, the way the cars handle, the way the ball bounces, and most importantly, the way it feels when you score a goal with that big explosion. I mean, it's just perfect. So I love Rocket League. And without giving too much away, don't tell me what you think about Rocket League. Just go ahead and tell me what's your number two game.
I will say I don't like the explosions, but that's all.
Oh, you're crazy.
Number two for me is Rise of the Tomb Raider. Now, Rise of the Tomb Raider, I did hype up. I did expect it to be one of my favorite games, so I shouldn't have said that my top three surprised me. But Rise of the Tomb Raider was... well, let me go back to the original Tomb Raider. The original Tomb Raider I bought day one on the 360. I played it and beat it pretty fast, probably in less than a week. And my original review, I remember I actually wrote a review on this on GameSpot's page, not for GameSpot, but just on their page. And I gave it like a 7.0. I was actually semi-disappointed. I thought it was an okay game, I guess. I mean, 7.0 for me is actually an okay. It isn't a good or a great like other review sites. But I then bought it on the PS4 when it re-released, and I actually ended up playing that game 4 times in a row and beating it. And I never 100%.
I played it once, and I loved it. I've only played it once, though.
Yeah, so I've played it a total of 5 times. Have no problem saying it's one of my favorite games from a gameplay standpoint.
Yeah,
it was also one of the first games that I got to play at 60 frames per second for a third-person shooter, and it was smooth as butter. It was just an amazing game to play. It is definitely one of my favorites. So that being said, yes, going into this year, knowing Rise of the Tomb Raider was coming, I did hype it up. I did think it could be a top game, and it lived up to it. It actually, I want to say exceeded. I don't know if I'll play it 5 times like I played the before, but that's only because it's a little bit longer, a little bit bigger, and there's just so many more games now. Like when Tomb Raider launched on the PS4, that was like a big release for me because I was like, I'm begging for games because at that point there wasn't a lot coming out. So there's that reason why I played it so much. But Rise of the Tomb Raider exceeded it in every way. I thought the story was done really well, whereas the original Tomb Raider reboot didn't really have a good story or characters. This had good characters. I really enjoyed most of the characters. Even the villains were done really well. They actually gave me something to care about, to want to play it through, to see the ending. I always like that in a game. I don't mind if it's predictable, just give me a reason to care. I do prefer mystery. There was a little bit of mystery to this, but a lot of it was pretty predictable. But the main thing is they gave me a reason to care. And so I thought they did the story really well. They did the combat really well. They literally did everything really well. Like, if I had to give it a review score, maybe a 9.8. Like, it's that high. That high to me.
Yeah, I can't wait to play that game in December on my PS4. It's going to be great.
You should probably buy it on that Xbox One that you're getting.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. All right, I will go ahead and share my number one game first. That way you can kind of be our finale in terms of the top 10 games.
And that's the way it should be, since I'm clearly the star of the show.
So I'll be the opening act for your washed-up old guys who can't admit they're not rock stars anymore act. All right, so
my favorite game of 2015... was on your list, but it was lower on your list, and that is The Witcher 3 The Wild Hunt.
Shocked by this.
It was my most anticipated game of the year as well, only because I had just played through The Witcher 2 on the 360 when they put it up as a Games with Gold deal. The Witcher is a series that I had seen for sale on Steam and things like that. I had just never gotten into it. It always struck me as a kind of obtuse, hard to get into series, not that different from the Souls series in terms of you have to be willing to commit to these games to get into them. That's just kind of how I knew they were. It was a European developer, and I've heard that they were just a little bit the ability to approach them as a newcomer was not always easy. So I just assumed, not really going to be games for me. So I finally tried The Witcher 2. I thought it was too hard when I started playing it. I was like, man, this combat
it is just too hard.
Even the tutorial, I was getting beat. I was like, this is dumb. Like, I'm just not, this is not a game for me.
But then I tried it again.
You put it on easy. Like,
okay, I got the hang. I got the hang of this. It's not too bad.
And then, so I worked my way through The Witcher 2, and I realized hidden underneath what is kind of a difficult game at first to kind of get the hang of things, hidden underneath was this really complex storyline where you have to make some tough decisions with some crazy political factions and some really big consequences of the decisions that you make. So Witcher 2 was great, and that got me pumped for Witcher 3. So I started reading about Witcher 1, which I heard was not a great game, so I caught up on the story there. And all of a sudden, I've got this entire world, this entire lore that I am completely sold on. Like, I'm ready to go. So Witcher 3 was my most anticipated game. And for me, it lived up to the hype and exceeded it. I knew it was going to be a big game. I knew all the hype about how long the game was going to be. I just didn't know how much I would enjoy the moment-to-moment play of it. Now, I know a lot of people criticize the game for things like movement and combat, and I am legitimately confused by those criticisms, because I think every game has a way that a character moves and feels, and the way that it feels to swing a sword, and the way that it feels to block. To me, the way that they've designed this game is the way that Geralt feels when he moves and walks and hits the sword and fights, and that's the way that he plays. I don't feel like any of it's done poorly. So I don't understand the criticisms of it, because moment to moment, I had more fun with that combat than I've had with an action RPG. That I can't remember one that I had that much fun with. So I loved the way it played. The story was good. All being told, it was great. There were times during the story that even I, a big fan of this game, thought, where are they going with this? Are they going to move the plot along? So it did struggle with pacing, because it's so big. It's too big in some ways. But just riding your horse around that world and jumping off and going to explore ? It's a beautiful world to explore. The side characters are shockingly developed. I can't believe the amount of work they put into everything, from the voice acting to the side storylines. Some of these little villages that have some monster that's attacking them from the nearby woods, that those story trees have no business being interesting or even in some cases compelling, but they are. And so they do a really great job building out that world and making you care about the smallest little things that happen. So yeah, The Witcher 3 for me met and exceeded expectations. And just like every game on these lists, and really on every list, it's not perfect, because there's things I can point to and say, yeah, I wish this wouldn't be this way, or I wish that the pacing was a little better, or whatever it might be. I wish that the beginning levels were a little bit clearer on what to do. Like, it's kind of hard to level up once you leave the opening area, you know, to get to the level that you need to be. So I understand some of the criticisms against it when it comes to pacing and story, that's for sure. But for me, by far, my favorite game this year.
Yeah, it's a great game. There's nothing else to say, because I've already talked about it. So my number one is Fall Rocket League.
Uh-oh.
I was actually just thinking about it as you're talking about yours. I just realized you and I just went through our top 10, and not one of us had Fallout 4 on there. But anyways, so yes, it's Fall Rocket League. Rocket League is definitely my favorite game of the year. And we'll talk about this more and more for every show we do, because Tim and I play it a lot together, and I play it whether anybody else is online or not. I'm constantly on Rocket League. In fact, I've been struggling with it, because I'm like, it's really taking away from me enjoying other games like Xenoblade Chronicles, or even I started Knights of the Old Republic 2 again, and I'm like, well, I could start this, but then it takes away from Rocket League. So I go back to Rocket League. So Rocket League is that addicting that it's perfect in every way, for at least for me. I'm a big soccer fan / hockey fan, and the hockey mode is phenomenal. The soccer mode is phenomenal. I mean, everything they've done for that game has just been pure gold. The way they've supported it, the fact that I got it free on my PlayStation,
that's crazy.
It's crazy. And then the fact that a lot of, like, and they haven't done a lot of arena updates or anything like that, but anytime they release a new arena, it's free. The only paid DLC I've bought is more cosmetic, and I've been buying it because I just want to support the developer. But there's nothing much else I can say that it's, to me, it is a perfect game. Sure, yeah, there's...
It's a comfort food, too. Like, it's so easy to come back to.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why I like it is because when right now I'm currently trying to play Mad Max is another one I'm trying to get into. And Mad Max is a good game. I won't say it's a bad game. But I am struggling to get into that, too, because for open world games, it takes a little bit of time to get into it, get used to the combat, get used to, okay, this map's huge, where am I going, what am I doing, why am I doing this? Rocket League has none of that. Rocket League is hit start, hit that you want to get into a game, and then play. And it's so simplistic, and it's one of those games that it's so simple, anybody can play it, but there's so much depth to it that it makes those who play it a lot, like me, want to continue to play it. And I'm very competitive, so I hate losing. Well, I hate jerks, too, so I get really angry when people talk trash when they stink, and they're trying to tell everybody else they stink, so it's the perfect game for me.
So, to me, when I knew I was going to be hooked on that game is when I scored my first goal, and... Like, I know you said, I don't know if you meant you don't like the explosions when you demolish someone, or if you don't like the explosions when you score a goal.
I'm not a big fan of the explosion when you score a goal.
See, to me, when you scored, that kind of fanfare, like the big horn, or kind of, sounds like a foghorn, or if you're on the Colosseum map, then it's like the trumpets. Those things blow as every car in the area just gets knocked way back in air, almost kind of like quasi-slow motion. And to me, that's just kind of like this adrenaline-pumping moment. That's when I got hooked. But yeah, I agree with everything you just said. It's easily one of the best games this year. One of my favorite moments in gaming this year was that experience of scoring that first goal. And all of a sudden, I was like, okay, all right, I'm on board. Like,
yeah, I mean, I was honestly hyped for it before it came out. I didn't even know it was going to be free. And I was kind of hoping it would be a $20 game, and I had already decided I was going to buy it. That's how into it I was... into it before it released, but I never played the beta or anything like that. I just heard from a friend who had played in it that it was a legit game and it was really good. So it's definitely
ready for it. Like
my surprise of 2015 of how much I love it.
Because it was surprised that it even came. Like I didn't know anything about it at all.
It almost changed my opinion of indie games and developers, but nope, I still hate them. But I do love Rocket League.
You will learn. You will learn to love.
All right, so then you mentioned Mad Max. I imagine that's going to be on this next list. So we went through our top 10 games, at least as they stand right now. What are some games, and you don't have to dig into each of them necessarily, but just give me a kind of a short version of what games you feel like you've missed out on so far this year. Now, it could be because you tried them, they didn't hook you, so you shelved it temporarily. Maybe you were super hyped on it, and for whatever reason it didn't deliver, or maybe you just literally haven't had time to get to certain games from this year. So what this past year have you missed out on?
I'll kind of combine that question with what I've missed out on to what also may have just disappointed me in general. I would say Mad Max is definitely one of them that I'm trying to play now that came out in September. I did buy it on PC. I got it for super cheap, $20, so I figured, well, I'll definitely play at least $20 worth. I did. I mean, I got probably 4 or 5 hours in, but... And I enjoyed it. Like, there was not one time, like, if anybody brings up Mad Max, I never say, oh, it's a bad game or it's a terrible game. No, it's a good game. I just couldn't get into it. I am now trying to get into it now that I have a copy of it on PS4 thanks to GameShare. It's good. I like it. But I don't know if I'm hooked still.
Okay.
I'm probably 4 hours in. 4 or 5 hours in, because I am definitely further than I got on my PC. So,
yeah.
But it's still like I'm still like when I die, this is funny because this is the Rocket League effect. I die and I immediately turn the game off and go to Rocket League. So if I die once, like I could just start the game, and if I die within 5 minutes, I quit and I go to Rocket League.
You're like, you know where I don't die? Rocket League. See ya.
I do get mad at the game because one of the things that I don't like about it is like when you die. You start back at where you started before you made that journey. So, like, if you're at your, let's just say you're at your, like, base camp and you drove across the map and then died, as far as I know, and I could be wrong, I always end up going back to my base camp when I die. And I'm like, are you freaking serious? I don't want to drive. So I just turn it off and go back to Rocket League. But yeah, that's one of the
games. What else have you missed out on this year? That's a good example of one. That was a major release on the same day as Metal Gear Solid 5, and so that kind of got overshadowed for a lot of people, too.
Yeah, and Metal Gear Solid 5 was the next one I was going to go to.
Oh, okay.
I am a Metal Gear Solid fan, and like I said earlier, not a fanboy. But 5 is just not what I wanted. I know a lot of people love the open world, and you even talked about how much you like the game. But I prefer the linear, I almost say it's linear. All Metal Gear games are a little open. I just would prefer it to be a little bit more of a linear-driven story, and I didn't feel like 5 had that. And then 5 was kind of like Mad Max in that it pissed me off that when I would die, I can think of the mission right now I'm stuck on. So one mission where I run for about a mile. It literally takes me like 6 minutes to get to where I even see a person to kill. And if I die, I have to rerun that 6 minutes. And I've died, I think I've died 3 or 4 different times.
Well, but you have to admit, if a game got an award for most intense running, I think Metal Gear would win.
I 100% agree with that.
It zooms in, and you kind of it almost sounds like wind in your ears. Like, the audio is brilliant in that. And it's like, I'm like, whoa, I'm really running right now.
Well, yeah, so, there's a lot they do right with the game, so I'm not going to sit here and beat it down. And I've said this before to you, that it's a game I believe that if I actually sat down and I had no distractions, Rocket League, and just said, I'm going to play this game no matter how much I die, no matter how much it annoys me, I'm just going to play it, I think I would walk away from it going, that is an amazing experience. So that is one of the games that, for me personally, it was a little bit of a disappointment because it wasn't what I wanted. And I try not to be a spoiled brat about games. I try to play the game that the developer or the publisher created. But for this one, I'm like, oh man, I kind of wish you wouldn't have gone open world and just kind of did your same thing. So that one, and then another major one would be Fallout 4. I got 10 hours into that. I enjoyed the 10 hours, but it was another one. I would die, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to go play Rocket League. You know, because I just felt like I was playing Fallout 3 with a little bit better visuals.
I'm sensing a pattern here.
Yeah, it's not made up. It's Rocket League's fault. Like, if my marriage falls apart, Rocket League.
Rocket League,
If my kids grew up feeling like their father was never in their life, Rocket League.
Yeah.
It's Rocket League's fault. So those are probably the top three that I feel like I missed out / disappointed with.
Okay. All right, well, my list is kind of similar. So Fallout 4, for the same reasons. I didn't get even 10 hours into it, but I liked it. But it's one of those games that I thought, okay, there's going to come a time when I have this itch to play a game that's incredibly open and has a ton of customization options and is just a world that I want to get lost in. Not unlike the itch that I have before I played something like The Witcher 3. So I could see myself getting totally lost in Fallout 4 and loving it, but now just wasn't the time. So that's one that I missed out on, and it possibly could be on that final, top 10 list at some point in the future. Same thing with Bloodborne. From what I've played so far, and again, it was only maybe 3 or 4 hours in. I didn't get far enough in to really give it an honest opinion. The combat does feel really good, and for what they're trying, which I would argue against someone who pits it up against The Witcher, and I don't know why they do that, for what Bloodborne's trying to do, they absolutely nail it. I mean, the combat feels amazing. It feels great. I like the movement because that's the way that game is designed and that's what it's trying to do. And I think it's really, really great.
Yeah, I would say Bloodborne has probably, for me personally, the best combat. But I already liked Souls games to a certain extent, but they felt too slow and sluggish. Bloodborne is the opposite as far as it still plays like a Souls game, but it's faster, it's quicker, and it's less dependent on blocking and more on dodging and quick attacks, and I like that. It's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I haven't gotten deep enough in to be able to make a statement one or the other on that, but not to get into too much of the Bloodborne versus Witcher conversation because I'm tired of that with the online debates, but just for me personally, it's a game that I have kind of tabbed as, okay, I need to really sit down and dig more into this game. Because you know what? When it comes down to it, maybe when I actually get couple dozen hours into that game, I'll look at it and say, now I see why they were comparing the two types of combat, and now here's what I think. So,
I've played both, and they're both in my top five, and no. No.
The similarities between them?
I mean, sure, The Witcher's tough, and sure, Bloodborne's tough, so I guess you could say that, but they're really different. They're, no.
Yeah. So I already said Fallout 4, Bloodborne, and then Mad Max is another one. You talked about that as well. That's a game I haven't even turned on at all yet. So I've got it ready to play, looking forward to it. And then I'll also mention Call of Duty single player. Now, you're
talking about how
you're no good at it. You're absolute garbage at it, I think you said.
You can quote me on that.
Worst player ever. Yeah, worst player ever. Okay. I enjoyed the multiplayer I played with Black Ops 3. I don't know, probably logged somewhere in about the dozen hour range in some multiplayer since it came out. I like it. I like especially playing hardcore mode and the single shot kill type stuff. But the single player mode, maybe I'm on mission 2. So that's a game that I've kind of missed out on in terms of really getting the full experience. So that's one that at some point I'll want to play through that shooter. But other than that, there haven't been too many major releases that I feel like I've missed out on. Those are really the main. Those are the main four: Bloodborne, Fallout 4, Call of Duty, and Mad Max. So yeah, so at least gives me some games to kind of fill in these gaps as we start 2016. I know there's lots of good games coming out, but as I'm looking at, I guess you can call it a backlog. There's plenty to fill in those spaces. So yeah. Speaking of 2016, how do you feel about talking about things that are upcoming?
Sounds good, but before we do that, there is one last thing I'd like to talk about. I'd like to talk about games that we played in 2015 that aren't from 2015.
That's right.
Did you have any games that you played, Tim, that were, you know, older games? Like, one of the things, like, the three games that we just talked about, since we pretty much listed the same three games, I am completely convinced I will at least play one or two of them in 2016. Like, I'll end up... Because I always do that. And it's funny, I do it with Far Cry. I beat Far Cry 3 the year after it released, even though I bought it the day it came out. And I did that with Far Cry 4. So I was curious if you have a habit of doing that as well.
I do. And especially this year, being my first year owning a PS4, I had a... already built up at least, what was it, about a year and a half worth of PS4 games I hadn't played yet. So for me, the games that I've played through this year, and I'm looking through this list here, I think I've beaten almost all of them. Shadow of Mordor is one that came out in 2014 that instantly kicked off my new experiences with this current gen console with a bang. I mean, I loved Shadows of Mordor. It felt like Assassin's Creed set in Middle Earth in a lot of ways. There's a lot of differences, but it felt that way. You know, a lot of stealth, a lot of climbing, and the way that you kind of sneak up on enemies. But the Nemesis system was completely new, completely amazing. I love that system. I know games coming out in the future are probably going to try to mimic that, and that's not really a bad thing. So I really liked that Nemesis system from Shadows of Mordor. The story was non-existent. I couldn't even tell you the storyline, but... fun game.
I think I skipped all the cutscenes when I played it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember what it was about.
But I liked it. I liked the combination of the human with the kind of that spirit, that spectral whatever being. Didn't really care why they were connected, but having that power mix was really cool. I also played through Infamous Second Son. I hadn't played that yet. Really enjoyed that too. Although I think Delson as a character is kind of...
I don't know. He's not that great.
But the game itself was fun to play, using the new powers as you unlocked them, as you beat each other superpower character, and then you got to use their powers. That was a lot of fun. I did not play the DLC for that yet. I really should. I've heard that First Light's pretty fun.
I had fun with it. I didn't at first because I didn't like the arena they put you in, but after you get out of the arena and kind of explore, I thought it was good.
Yeah, so Infamous was really great. Just like you said, Far Cry 4, probably one of my favorite experiences from this year that I've played as far as older games go. Like, I think I might have liked that even more than Shadows of Mordor in some ways, although they're very different games. But really, really liked Far Cry 4 quite a bit. I liked that open world. What a good-looking game, too. Like,
yeah,
I can't believe that game looks amazing. Same thing I can say about Wolfenstein New Order, which I played through this past spring. I loved that alternate history. It was kind of a scary game in addition to being really fun and exciting. There are some terrifying moments in there too, but that's a really neat game. I've played through Uncharted 1 and 2 via the Uncharted Collection. I had never played those games before. 2 is an amazing experience, and I am currently working my way through 3. I just started that recently. So,
are you liking it?
I'm liking it a lot. I'm liking it a lot. I mean, I'm not that far into it, probably 3 hours maybe into 3. But yeah, I like it a lot. Destiny Taken King, we talked about that already. I had not played that until this year, but I enjoyed my time with that. Assassin's Creed Unity, I played this past spring. I didn't finish it all the way, but I enjoyed it. And then Persona 4 Golden, just to kind of mix things up, is my last one. That's another game that I've played probably about 40-45% through that right now. It's one of those games that I'll play late at night as I'm getting ready to go to bed. I can't let go of it gaming just yet, so I'll lay in bed and play a little bit of that before I fall asleep. So
yes.
That's my list of games that I've played pre-2015 this past year.
It's a nice list. It's double mine. Mine's a little bit shorter. I'll start with Far Cry 4. I also finished that. I actually just finished it last week. Started it a couple weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Really enjoyed it as it got towards the end. And I think, again, it's Rocket League-itis. I kind of was just like, oh, just get me through this game so I can just say I beat it. And I kind of don't like the fact that I'm getting like that. But I did enjoy my time with it. It is a good game. I am glad I saw it all the way through the end. I actually enjoyed the story more than I thought I would because I had heard how terrible it was.
Like, oh.
Yeah. I didn't see any of that stuff coming because all I had ever heard was the story in Far Cry 4 is terrible. And yes, everybody who says Far Cry 4's story is terrible has that voice when they say it.
It's terrible.
So Far Cry 4, I enjoyed it, liked it. The game that I did not like in 2014, but ended up retrying it, playing it, beating it, and loving it in 2015 was Shadow of Mordor. Probably because I sucked at it. I kept dying a lot, and it really infuriated me that they kept ranking up, and I kept getting worse. So I quit.
These stupid-looking orcs are becoming captains.
And I quit after like 3 or 4 hours. And I actually had a physical copy of it, so I traded it in. And then the Xbox One had a sale. I think it was late 2014, like during the holidays. And I bought it for $30 and decided to play it in 2015, earlier this year, and I absolutely loved it. I remember sharing with somebody saying that I would rate it a 9.5, just for gameplay alone. The only thing I would take that 0.5 off for is the story, like you had already said, was like, oh, let me just skip this cutscene. The end boss battle was kind of dumb too, but overall,
definitely, yes, it was dumb.
Overall, just loved it. And it's one of those titles, like, I loved it so much, but there's so much room for improvement. Like, they could make the open world better. They could make the stories and characters better. There's so much room for potential there. Like, it's an amazing game.
And just a quick addition to that. If they were to make a sequel that opened up the variety of environments that you're in, if you think about that game, I basically just picture, like,
it's the same
mostly
thing over
a
and
barren
over.
Mountainous land.
Yeah, it was the same thing that, over and over.
Yeah, so, yeah, there's a lot of potential there, for sure. A
lot of potential. The next game I'm going to talk about is the one I'm most proud of, besides Bloodborne, that I played and beat this year, and that is Zelda Wind Waker. It was the first Zelda game I have ever beaten.
You are the worst.
That is why I made sure I beat it. I was actually ashamed that I've never beaten Zelda a game.
Oh my goodness.
Especially since, again, I'm not exaggerating, I probably put 100 plus hours into Link to the Past, and I probably put anywhere from 50 to 60 hours into Ocarina of Time with my cousin. Him and I played and started.
He's a legend. He's a legend at this point.
He is. Him and I played that game a lot.
The Mighty Daniel.
But we never finished. As far as I know. Maybe we did and I wasn't there. I don't know. But we played it together. It was one of those things where he would die, I would take the controller, and so on. So very proud of the fact that I finished that game. It also became tedious towards the end. There's
the M-rated version.
Yeah. There's certain things they ask you to do in that game at the end of it that I was like, oh, really? Really, Nintendo? I want to cut your throat right now. but I did overall enjoy it. It is my favorite Zelda game. It was even before I beat it. That is why I finished it. It's because I had already decided it was my favorite back when I played on the GameCube. And the final one... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's one of my favorite Zelda games, too. It's not my absolute favorite, but yeah, it's a really good one.
We'll see. Like, I have plans of playing Ocarina of Time and actually finishing it, and I would like to actually play A Link to the Past and finish it, but Ocarina of Time is probably more feasible because it has a remaster, remake, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
remaster. Whereas A Link to the Past, unless they're going to redo it, I don't do old crap graphics.
Snob.
Yes. And then my last one, I haven't beaten this one, but I started it this year, and I've actually gotten into it about 5 hours in, is Knights of the Old Republic 2. I have played the first two Knights of the Old Republic games multiple times, so I'm mainly playing it again just because I don't remember it. I remember loving it, and I still do in the first 5 hours that I played. I just don't remember everything. I don't remember all the characters. I don't remember the story. Like, I can tell you what happens in the first Knights of the Old Republic, but I can't remember the second one.
Oh, okay.
I do remember characters. I do remember worlds, that type of stuff. But I just want to kind of relive it. Do I think I'll actually finish it? I don't know. Because of all the games that are about ready to come upon us in 2016, which is kind of where I want to go now, and that is a preview of what's to come in 2016.
All right, let's do this. Let's talk about our most anticipated games. Let's just pick three. Let's just pick three games that we're really excited about. If you can, just kind of putting you on the spot, top of your head.
I think it's a good idea because... we could go on forever. There's a lot of games that are already on my 2016 calendar. So I think just off the top of my head, without like looking, which means I potentially could forget something, I'm going to say The Division is definitely in the top three. Mm-hmm. Uncharted 4 comes to mind. And then I'm going to go with Quantum Break.
You think that's going to still come out this year, Quantum Break?
I do. I don't think it'll get delayed at all. I think it's going to hit its April. Okay. I think it's already been... I don't think it was officially delayed, but I think it was like one of those games that they thought was going to be released in late 2015, and then they kind of were like, no, there's no chance. So hopefully it won't get delayed. It might get delayed a month or two, but I'm hoping this is Microsoft's big Xbox One exclusive during the springtime when Uncharted 4 launches. In fact, Quantum Break is scheduled to come out April 5th, and if I'm remembering correctly, I think Uncharted got moved to the 22nd? I don't know. No, 26th. April 26th. It is on my calendar. So it's 3 weeks later. So yeah, that's right. Big deal to me. I know a lot of people haven't been hyping up Quantum Break as much as I'd like them to, because I really believe it has the opportunity to be Microsoft's Uncharted style game, third person action adventure. But it's got its own unique twist in that it has a TV series that goes along with it, and actually has legit actors, which makes me happy.
That to me is very interesting about this whole thing, the way it ties into this series. Yeah, I'm intrigued to see how that comes.
And I like the fact that maybe I'm not understanding it correctly, but from my understanding, based off decisions and things that happen in the game, it affects how the outcome in the TV show. So it's like certain actions you take in the game then tell the TV show when it's playing, okay, play this part of the TV show, not that part.
Oh.
So
that's kind
of
cool.
Yeah, so and I think one of the developers, or I should say creators, was talking about it, and he was talking about, you know, while we're still telling a very linear story, like we're going to have one outcome, how you get there will be different every time you play it. So, and what he, one of the examples he said was, you may not have a character there, they may have died off, that another person has. So it kind of reminded me of, like, The Walking Dead. Every time you play The Walking Dead, based off decisions you make, your actual game could be different than, say, my game could be different, say, yours. Maybe you keep somebody alive that I had killed off. But the outcome is going to be the exact same. They didn't change that.
Man, I'll tell you, you just mentioned that. Nothing more gut-wrenching than seeing Clementine will remember that. I'm like, oh, what did I do?
Yep.
All right, so you've got The Division, Uncharted 4, and Quantum Break. So kind of like first half of the year, those are the things right now you get
to set. Yeah, and I think it's just because that's what's on the top of my brain.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, I've got kind of some, those are games that are exciting for me too, but in the interest of kind of mixing it up a little bit and not totally copying, because I think at least Uncharted and maybe even The Division would be crossovers for me. But I'll give you three different games that I'm really pumped about. Number one is coming out next month, and that is Far Cry Primal, which is a game that when it was announced, I was like, oh, that's kind of a cool setting. And yeah, it might be worth trying. But now that I've played Far Cry 4 and I've experienced what they've done with the bow and arrow mechanic, and then in those Shangri-La level sections where you're controlling the tiger, and I imagine some of those mechanics are going to carry over to Primal, if not a lot of them, with the way that was like sneaking around with your pet. And using your bow and arrow and using your knife, I imagine that's going to be some of the vibe from Primal. Maybe not, but I'm imagining
it kind of had. And I know it's first person compared to third person, but it kind of had a Horizon, a vibe to it.
Yeah,
and so
and speaking of Horizon, that's my other most anticipated game.
How
and
good
I agree
it,
with
how
you.
How good am I?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It did have that Horizon. The difference being, of course, Primal being actually set way, way in the past and Horizon being set way, way in the future, where things have kind of reverted back to, you know, old prehistoric type days, except they're now robots.
Yeah, and I have a feeling they're going to play kind of similar, except for, like I said, one's third person, one's first person, but I don't think anybody's
going to
be running around with machine guns.
The vibe, and I, of course, we didn't get to play it, but like the way that Horizon looks like it's controlling and moving with the aiming, it seemed a little bit more like a Shadows of Mordor style, like the way she was moving around and hiding in the brush and stuff. I don't know if that's how it's going to control, but it just kind of gave me that feeling of like, I wonder if it. She looks like she's moving kind of like the character in Shadows of Mordor did. So who knows? But Horizon's one of the other ones that I'm. That might be my top anticipated game. I'm really excited for that one. And then let's go for Hitman. I'm a huge fan of that series. I do love stealth games. Like I like that success of sneaking around and getting past all the enemies and getting that perfect score, that perfect stealth assassin Hitman score. This series, for some reason, I enjoy all of them. I like, you know, here's your mission, here's who you have to kill, and you got all these different options, and go. And I love that. So I'm looking forward to Hitman quite a bit. I'm a little bit wary of how they're going to release this one. It sounds like one of the reasons they delayed it was because the reaction to them saying, we're going to put out one map to start, and then we'll release more. I feel like they're going to beef it up a little bit for the release in March, but we'll see. So, yeah, those are my most anticipated games coming out pretty soon.
I do want to add on one thing, and that is I have to mention again, Dragon's Dogma Dark Arisen is coming to PC, which means I get one of my all-time favorite Xbox 360 games in 1080p 60 frames per second. And that's
listen, if you're happy, I'm happy. So I'm happy for you.
January 15th, buddy. Nice. My daughter's birthday, and she doesn't even matter.
You heard it here first. Hey, listen, thank you so much, everybody, for listening, for sticking with us for these opening few episodes here as we kind of recapped 2015. You got to learn a little bit about us, and then we talked about just a tiny bit about 2016, what we're looking forward to. But we're looking forward to talking more about games and also maybe even including more about our families and what our kids are playing and what it's like to kind of balance this whole major hobby. And obviously for Derek especially, this financial drain that we have in our lives that brings us so much joy and that's a big part of our lives, really. And if you're part of one of these communities, whether it's, again, on Facebook or if you're on Reddit or really any of these forums and you're part of a community, you know that gaming is what has brought a lot of us together, the similar interest in these worlds that have been created, these characters that we all get to experience. So hopefully we'll get a chance to connect with some of you that are listening. And if we already know you, if you're friends and family, thanks for supporting. If we don't know you, then make sure you introduce yourself to us. I am Tim_Nestor on Twitter. You can also find me on Facebook, and you can also find my YouTube channel on youtube.com/NestorFunk. That's NesterFunk. And Derek doesn't do any social media, so don't worry about following him.
No, you don't need to follow me. I'm good.
But seriously, thank you guys for supporting us. Thanks for listening, and we're out.
Bye.